I think, unlike most conferences that we've all been to, we'll try to finish pretty close to time because I know everyone has some place to go. What we're going to do right now is talk about the active learning classrooms. There were two that were constructed, and this is, I'm not going to steal Adam's commentaries, but two important classrooms that have are changing a number of individuals, including myself, the way that they approach some of their teaching. And before I introduce the panel, I will ask Adam to give a summary of some of this, some of these workings. Adam Finkelstein.
Hi, thank you. Adam Finkelstein from Teaching and Learning Services, and I promise to take under 4 minutes here, if ideally, for the three slides, just to give you an idea of what the rooms that we are talking about. Just quick context, the Teaching and Learning Spaces Working Group, if you don't know about it, created and championed by the Provost and is chaired by Cynthia Wesson, Director of Teaching and Learning Services, with representation all across campus. And it's really, its mandate was to create a vision for teaching and learning and development of all of our spaces, both design of new ones and redesign of old, and steward the funding of renovations and IT of about $2 million a year for every year. We've gone through about, I guess, close to $8 million worth of renovations and well to over 300 rooms that have been impacted over the last couple of years. And the idea was really to create a cross-disciplinary, cross-unit group focused on sound pedagogical thinking and pedagogical principles when it comes to thinking about where McGill needs to go for teaching and learning spaces on campus. The active learning classrooms came up as part of that process in the last year as an initiative from the group. Based on a lot of experiences that have been happening across North America, there are a number of other universities that have similar type active learning classrooms. And really, these are rooms designed specifically to foster three principles of effective practice. First one being active and collaborative learning. These classrooms look different and they feel different. The classrooms are designed with round tables, generally, or with movable furniture, or trying to take advantage of students facing each other, not having the instructor in the front of the room, but actually among the students, the theater in the round concept as well. Trying to stress student-faculty interaction, so not having a back of the room where people can get lost in, like the back there, which we'd hope you'd come and actually join us. But everybody always drifts to the back, and having no back of the room is a very, very interesting concept in a space. And as well, having a supportive campus environment and a lot of the technology that goes along with this kind of information sharing, having students being able to present from their tables, sharing their own screens with each other, being able to use multiple sources in multiple situations on campus. And really, the ultimate goal of the committee was to create one of these rooms on upper campus, lower campus, and Mac campus. So the first room was on lower campus, and it was Burnside 511 is the current name. It's in the back of the Hitchfield Library. It was such a poor space that you couldn't stay in that space for more than 5 minutes without falling asleep. And that was not because of the individuals in it, but actually because of the ventilation of the space to begin with. And a lot of our renovations have to deal with livability and things that we value at McGill, like breathing, which we think are important to the teaching and learning process. This space has been totally redesigned, and as you can see, and this is actually a picture of Nigel here, we have multiple screens lining the walls of the classroom that you can either write on markers, or you can actually project onto. Students are arranged in tables that are relatively round, and actually these are sort of these half-moon sort of designs where one individual can actually see what the others are doing. The monitors are low. There's no barrier between the students across the table to talk, so you can actually have a group of students at a table doing things. The instructor in this case is sort of in the corner, in sort of the focal point of all of these different screens. Obviously, we deal with things like pillars. But one of the nice things about these types of classrooms is with a one-to-one ratio of students working on their own machines is being able to share their screens and share information, and we'll hear a lot more about that in a second. Upper campus in Education 627 used to look like this. Another horrendous room, ventilation problems in a terrible space that nobody wanted to teach in, and has been converted into a space that looks like this. And here we have a lot of the principles that we've been talking about, a centralized podium, screens on different sides, multiple walls for collaboration. There's actually a table color that corresponds to a wall that you're able to write on. The students work in round tables. They have screens they can share with each other. They can share with other people in the room. Instructor can draw up different sources at different times, a document camera, and then a PowerPoint, etc. And then, of course, our planned one for this summer, McDonnell Campus, taking these two rooms and converting it into a sort of a space where there will be a movable wall where you could have two rooms or one room. Again, the same concept of students facing each other, interacting with each other, and the faculty member much more in the middle of the space than in the front or sort of the center of the room. Much more in the center of the room. So the question that we're posing to the panelists today is, what impact has teaching in the active learning classroom had on you and your students' experiences? So I'm going to hand it back to David, who will introduce our panelists and go from there.
Thank you very much, Adam. I'd like to introduce the panel, Jean-Paul Remieux, who is waving his hand, Tina Piper, Faculty of Law, Carolyn Samuel, Faculty of Arts, Kerwin Myler, also from Law. Are we going to get a brief today? I guess. Okay. And Nigel Roulet, School of the Environment, who will definitely give us a brief on how it's functioning for him. All of these individuals are dealing in one or the other of those rooms. I actually have dealt with it myself, and I have to say it's probably even a different experience than some of theirs, but I've enjoyed it. It's been quite different. It's been the smallest class I've had in about 30 years, about 75 students. So smaller classes, interactivity, that's really the name of the game. And I guess I would ask Jean-Paul to take the, don't have to come up here, but can speak for maybe 5 minutes about your experience, and then we'll just go down at least my list. You can change the order. But Tina, would you like to start? Okay, we'll go left to right. I guess that's the way we read, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, Tina, go ahead. That's fine. No, I'm sorry. You were dozing, I could tell. Okay.
Thanks. So I taught in Education 627. I taught a course called Common Law Property, which is a second year basic introduction to property law. And Kerwin was, in fact, in that class. So he's going to speak to his experience as a student in the class, and I'm going to speak to my experience as a teacher in the class, in the classroom. So traditionally, the course is taught in the Faculty of Law in a traditional lecture room. So seats are aligned in rows leading up to the back. There might be about 12 rows, I guess, and there are about 60 students in the class. It's a course that works really well if students have the opportunity to work through exercises and apply their knowledge concretely. But traditionally, I'd found, and this was the fifth time I'd taught the course, that I hadn't really had an opportunity for students to actually apply their knowledge in a very concrete way during the teaching of the course, and so it didn't make property law very real. I mean, property law, it's about stuff, right? It's about things, and if you can't make that link between the things and the sort of learning experience, it sort of falls flat. Now, my comments are sort of in the absence of any evaluations or formal feedback, but I solicited informal feedback from the students during the course. And there were two big impacts that the classroom had on my experience. The first was what I call the sort of 10% rule that we have in law. And that is that only about 10% of students ever participate in any course. Maybe it's less, maybe only 2%. In a class like that, that meant there would usually be about 6 students who talked all the time, and there would be a sort of vast mass of other students who didn't really participate. And what I found about the active learning classroom was that because I was in the center of the room, and students were sort of around me, and sometimes I moved around, particularly during the exercises. It made class participation much less, well, I mean, I can't speak to their experience, but it made class participation increased ginormously. So by the end of the course, I think pretty much everyone in the class had, in fact, participated in one way or another, and the nature of what we called, or what I called class participation, also changed, or sort of what I identified as class participation had also changed. So students participated through working on exercises, through reporting back on the exercises they'd worked on. Students participated when we engaged in discussion at their tables. Students participated in traditional sort of lecture style by asking questions while I was presenting information, and so on and so forth. So I was really impressed by the way that there was something about the classroom that made it much perhaps less threatening or much easier for students to participate in the in class, and maybe that has something to do with the architecture. In some of the informal feedback I got, it suggested that it had something to do with the round tables and the fact that I was in the center of the room. The second big impact that the classroom had, and this had something to do with this problem that I had teaching in a lecture style classroom, which was I like to give exercises. I like to apply the knowledge fairly rapidly. So I leave the content to the casebook and to their readings, and then like to move pretty directly into application and thinking about the sort of very practical analytical problems. And that's virtually impossible in a lecture classroom, because in a lecture classroom, students tended to sit in sort of in the same places, and sometimes they'd only have one or two other people sitting beside them, and it was virtually impossible to get involved in any kind of exercises that involved more than one person, and that involved any kind of movement. And the room sort of the sort of traditional lecture classroom really deflated that ability. It made it very difficult to give any sort of working together kinds of problems. And the Education 627 really helped give me a space where I could actually engage students in exercises on a regular basis. So very active learning strategies of sort of thinking through problems, working together, collaborating. And I think that also increased participation, because students were able, in fact, to get to know each other. And many said that in that class they'd actually spoken to people who they'd never spoken to, even though they were in second year of law and had many opportunities to get to know each other. So I don't know if it created any new friendships, but I think at the very least it encouraged communication and reduced a sense of isolation. So those are my two comments.
Thank you very much. Kerwin, maybe you'd like to comment on the other end of the ledger.
Sure.
Thank you.
First of all, Professor Piper hasn't finished correcting the exams yet, so I had to be careful, but there's anonymous grading in the law faculty, so no matter what I say, I'll probably do okay. I guess I'm a mature student, and I have a bit of a strange background as a mature student per se, because I've been teaching myself for about 10 years at the post-secondary level in a number of different schools, and I've taught in computer labs, nothing as fancy as what I recently had the pleasure of taking a class in fact. So I sort of had the experience as a student, but I inevitably wind up evaluating the teachers or examining the teachers' pedagogical methods and so forth and so on. And I'm always just watching how the students engage as well at the same time. And this brings a lot of ups and downs for me, because when I feel when the class is going really well, I feel great as a student and I feel great for the teacher. And when the course is going so-so well, I feel bad as a student and I suffer for the professor as well. So I feel like it's either really, really good or I suffer twice as much as everybody else. But Professor Piper's class was always great. So, that said, I'd make a few preliminary observations. One is that for students today, there really isn't any novelty effect in going into this kind of environment. And often I think there's a novelty effect for the professors, because it's a relatively new experience. But the students have had this starting way back when, except for me. I never had it back in high school. But just about everybody in my class, none of them are surprised by the environment. So it's peculiar to see that for the professors it's a novel experience, but not for the students quite often. Another observation that I would make is to never forget that students are lazy, and not always, but in law they can be lazy too, and they do want to see that professor and they're working, and of course they don't see the background work that's been done to prepare for these sessions. And I think students still want a certain amount of lecturing. We want that dead poet society, Robin Williams on the desk talking to the students experience at least every once in a while. And that really goes, it really conflicts with the discovery learning environment. I think it's always important to remember the strengths and the weaknesses of something like, what was this, the active learning classroom. It's really not a good environment for lecturing. And if some students are indeed sitting back on to the professor. And I think it's important to try to limit the amount of lecturing in that kind of environment as much as possible. And Perhaps then it would be useful to split the class if it's twice a week, once in an actual old-fashioned educational environment, and the second time perhaps in the active learning classroom. I really did like the interactiveness of it, the fact that the professor could circulate amongst the students while we were working on things. I thought that was really great. I also thought what was really great was that we had a graduate student with us as well. And so there was basically twice as many opportunities to interact. The round tables certainly made group discussions a lot easier. Myself as a teacher always wanted to try to basically redecorate the class and turn desks around. And sometimes they were physically bolted to the floor so you couldn't do it. But when I could, I always made a lot of noise in the class, and the people who had to restructure the classroom afterwards probably always hated me. But so the round tables are great. Personally, I think they should be smaller, because in that particular classroom, the tables were about perhaps the size of the tables in this room, so you get a little bit of a dinner party feeling to it. And if it were the tables were just a bit smaller, I think it would be just a little bit more intimate, and there'd be even more discussion. So that's about all I'd like to say for now.
Thank you. Carolyn?
I taught a course in academic writing, English for academic purposes. The students were all graduate students, and they are second language students, so non-native speakers of English. I was offered the opportunity to teach in the active learning classroom 627 in education, and I thought, great, because I love experimenting with different things. But I didn't think it was going to be that big difference in my teaching, because language classes are typically small, and we do group work, we don't lecture, so having students clustered in small groups, that wasn't a new thing for me. But some exciting things happened in that classroom that I didn't expect, and I will talk about two of those. The two are autonomy, I'll call them autonomy, and collegiality. So autonomy, we try to make our students independent with their learning. We hope that we can teach them strategies so that they can continue their learning independently afterward. With language learning, that's very important, of course. You can't always have a language teacher at your side. You shouldn't always have a language teacher at your side. You have to have strategies for building on what you know and constantly being able to answer your own language questions beyond the classroom. What this environment afforded us was immediacy with responses to questions. And in the past, I would always say to students when they asked questions that I didn't have immediate answers to, was, I'll check it out, I'll get back to you, or go to this source, check it out, and report back to the class. But you lose that sense of, you lose the moment for students to learn, that teachable moment maybe when they have the question, it's burning, but you can't necessarily have the answer immediately. With the active learning classroom, students had computers at the ready, and we used them to develop strategies, develop ways to answer language questions beyond the classroom. Now, you might be thinking, well, okay, students have computers with them all the time. They have laptops in other classrooms. This environment offered the sharing aspect, and students could find answers. They were able to do the action of finding the response and then sharing it with others. And I think that was extremely valuable for students, and that's something that we don't have in the other classrooms where they can't share. They don't have the screen sharing option, for example. The other point I'd like to talk about is collegiality. I think pretty much everybody who taught in the active learning classrooms noticed that students bonded really well, and I say that based on discussions we've had, debriefings and so on with, you know, a group of professors. Students bonded really, really well for the most part in those classes. And in some cases, I suppose it had to do with how the professor was able to interact with the students. I think in my class in particular, it had to do with the round tables and the chairs on wheels, and students really loved just being able to wheel across the room to another table to talk to another student. Yes, we were wheeling back and forth to communicate and share ideas. But what was particularly valuable, I think, in this class was that the students realized that academic writing doesn't happen in isolation. So we were able to mimic an authentic environment, an authentic scenario, I guess, where academics talk to each other about their work. And they might do their typing alone, but there's something called peer review, and students in the class could have access to colleagues to discuss their work in a way that they don't normally do in a typical classroom. So I think that was, I was particularly happy about that they bonded and they felt they could talk about their writing, about their work, about their quizzes, about their assignments in a very comfortable way, and I would hope that that would carry on after the course where they can talk to their peers about their writing and share ideas. And I will stop at that.
Okay, from Center for Continuing Education, Jean-Paul Remieux. Excuse me, take it.
Tough one to pronounce. I teach a course on networking, computer networks. It's an introductory course. I talk about protocols, standards, bits and bytes, and I have students that come at night to listen to me about talking bits and bytes and standards and protocols, and they come at night after a long day of work, sometimes a tough day at work, and it's difficult to keep them awake from 6 to 9. And I've been teaching that course for about 4 years now, maybe 5 actually, and so this year was a new experience. I came into the active learning classroom at the last minute. I think I was offered to use that room like a week before Christmas or something like that. And so I was really not an expert on active learning and had no real clue about what this was all about. But, you know, I like experience, so I decided to go for it. And I'm happy I did because it was really a good experience. Now, what is it that's different in this room that I didn't have before? Well, there's a very big element of comfort. It's a great room. Like when students show up the first time, they just can't believe that we have these kind of facilities at McGill, and obviously they're not used to it. So it creates a positive atmosphere right away. Also, it's a room that is very technologically advanced. And, you know, there are features like the Symposium, for example, which is the equivalent of a tablet PC where you can easily write on. And I really like to, instead of having a static PowerPoint, having the ability to scribble on the screen. And it makes the whole lecturing experience much more interesting, I find. Also, a great feature in that room is the fact that you can share screens. And this is very important in my case because I use a lot of simulators for teaching. We have an amazing software for simulating computer networks. And this way, by using the simulator, I give the students the opportunity to use the simulator to get lost and identify problems and so on. But instead of me fixing the problem, I give them the opportunity to explain to the rest of the group what's going on their particular simulation. And because of the screen sharing software, students can actually see what's going on each student's monitor. So it's really a nice feature. What else is available? I'm not going to tell them all because I'll leave you some to me. Another thing also that I use that is a little bit related to what we talked about in the previous lecture is in the previous presentation is the fact that I record my lectures with Camtasia, and so it gives the students the ability to review. Now, these are all things that I used to do in the previous years using different technologies, different classroom. Actually, I had to switch in the middle of the break of the course. I had to go to a lab and so on. Now, what's different is that it really forced me to rethink about the way I teach because in the past, you know, my first hour and a half, I had no choice but to do lecturing in a class that only had a blackboard. So I would do the lab activities in the second part. Now what I do, I'm able to have my lab activities in the first part, so students have to fight with silly simulations, silly problems, and the way the classroom is set up, they can work together, and that is a great thing. And this way, you can use the second part of the class to go back on the problems they met and make a link between the practical issues they faced and the theoretical concept that they should use to fix these problems. So in that sense, it really changes the dynamic of the course. This being said, it was not a natural move. It took me a while to realize that people were starting to close their eyes after an hour and a half and to figure out, like, what were the possibilities of the room. So what I would suggest, really, is, first of all, don't start the active learning classroom as a last-minute thing. It really takes training. It takes educating about active learning. And I think it was a very positive, disruptive experience at the beginning, but very positive in the end.
Thank you very much. Nigel Roulet will be our last speaker. He's former head of the School of the Environment and a former member of the Board of Governors and a discoursive person on the fifth floor of Burnside, where he operated this last year.
Thanks, David. I was just laughing at the last comment made here about the preparation time, because I started in this classroom September 3rd at 8:30 a.m. in the morning, and there were more people from TLS and technicians in the room than there were students at that point in time, still putting all the wires together and everything like this. So it actually made for a super active classroom. Not only were the students learning, but everybody else was learning about what this classroom did at the same time. I'd say it's a great experience. I teach a course called Environmental Systems Modeling. It's an upper-level undergraduate course. There's between 20 to 35 students in the course, depending on what year you do it in. I've been teaching the same course for 11 years. I taught it in that classroom, the first classroom that Adam stuck up, which was the very linear version of 511, and I taught it in the new format this year, so it's actually a kind of a pairwise comparison that I can do between the first 10 years of teaching. The course consists of 13 weeks. I do 3 hours of lectures in total in the entire course. All the rest of it is problem-based learning with students learning how to build simulation models of dynamical systems. My comments related to this are the level of engagement of the students almost doubled in the course between what I taught in the previous 10 years up, and this is already a highly engaged level of students. The level of interaction was phenomenal in the course. From day one, they interacted between themselves, the three people that could see each other's screens. By week two, they were interacting across the screens to the other three people that were on the other side of the table, and by week three, the entire class, we were putting problems up on the multiple screens and we're being able to work with them. Now, what did this do? This resulted in a phenomenal transition from it being an instructor and one or two interlevels of interactions with the students to being an interaction all the way across. And the course is problem-based learning. And any of you that have taught problem-based learning realize that one of the issues is that you have to have very well-organized problems for students to work on and think how they go through. Well, what ended up happening in this course is I had those well-organized problems, but somebody mentioned teachable moments. We just had to suspend those and just fly by the seat of the pants and go with it, because the students generated so many problems on their own that I could put them up on the screens and we could go with that. Now, the one of the problems of doing that is you have to be a kind of instructor that doesn't mind looking like an idiot a significant portion of the time, because the students are presenting these problems very, very quickly and there's no way you can solve them. But the other 28 students that are sitting in the room can. And the advantage of that is that they see the strategies that their fellow students use to be able to examine problems. So rather than me teach one or two strategies to being able to solve this, there were probably 14, 15 strategies that were on the ground, and we would talk about those and go through. So the level that students learned and kind of the skill base that they were doing really, really went up. In this course, we do an assignment. About the 6 weeks in the course on Easter Island, we build a little model, and everybody is able to basically kill everybody on Easter Island when they cut too many of the trees down. There's no way of saving Easter Island, and it's one of the fundamental questions of sustainability that they learn about. I moved that forward to week four, so we went 2 weeks before that. In that course, normally in the normal course, there's about one-third of the students that have the eureka moment, that all of a sudden the penny drops, and rather than seeing the course about individual components of modeling, they actually start thinking in terms of systems, really thinking in terms of systems. I would say that moved forward 2 weeks, and I hit about 80% of the students the penny dropped for on that eureka moment in week four as opposed to the long run. And I attribute that to the level of engagement. So the other thing, too, is that this course is about systems, which has a lot of things that we lecture in the programs I'm in week in, week out. For 4 years that the students are here about, you know, feedback, dynamical systems, self-regulated systems, all these types of things, chaos, you hear about it all in the press. Students very seldom experience those because you really can't see them, except for by about the third to fourth week in this course, they actually had moved from it being what I would say book smart about these types of systems to actually experiencing. They had these experiential moments that went through the course. So those are the really big pluses for me. The one thing I will raise, Adam knows I'm going to raise this, the classroom does have some structural problems. Not to say the least, it's in Burnside Hall. Those of you that have been Burnside Hall, competes for the ugliest building on campus with McIntyre, I think. But those pillars that you see in the center of the room, there would be an advantage of actually getting rid of those pillars. One of those, Burnside Hall itself would fall down, but then you could actually visually see it. The podium is stuck in one end of the room, so you're actually tied to that. But my 19-year-old and 17-year-old daughter have solved this problem. All I need to do is Dad needs to get an iPhone, and then you can control the entire classroom from anywhere you want to be in the room by using this application that allows you to control the mouse on the main computer anywhere in the room. Now, Dad has to get up to speed to learn how to do that, but it is technologically possible to be able to do that. So that's the one downfall of the room, and I think you may have found it too, that you're anchored to this thing. But it then gets you into the center of the classroom. So rather than teaching to the students, you're teaching among the students, which I think is a critical thing that these rooms allow.
Okay, well, thank you all. Now, the question that's posed to the audience is up here. On the other hand, I don't know how many of you in the audience have had a chance. Anybody in the audience use this room who isn't up here? There are more than four or five of us, one or two. Maybe you would like to imagine being in the room. Maybe if I can... let me find this. I'll give you the room that I had looked at. Let me see, where are we? This is the one in education. It's a good representation. It's a tough room to photograph, that I can tell you. And the interesting thing about the room is that the tables are not A, B, and 1, and 2, because it was reported to us by the experts who put this room together, I mean, that the TLS team, is that nobody can remember 1, 2, 3, and A, B, C ever. So it's like the orange table, the green table, and the fuchsia table, and other colors like this. So maybe could be questions from the audience or even questions from the panel to probe. But how many of you, just as I could probe, would like to try it to or like to teach in a room like this? You don't have to raise your hand. It's really okay. You're not going to be picked on. But it's a fair number, I would say. Certainly, I found it that way. It was really interesting. I probably did more lecturing than I should, and I'm going to kind of evolve away from that, but I didn't know much of how to deal with this particular course in any other way to start with. So I want to get more of the interactive part. There's also a document camera, which is kind of nice, where you can actually take an object, a molecular model, or whatever object you might want to show, and without having to have a photograph of it, just put it under the document camera and it appears very nicely.
David, maybe I can
follow up on
something Nigel said, that it's important for the instructor to be among the students. In 627, which is what you see on the screen here, the podium is in the middle of the room among the students, and
that's
that was kind of a challenge. You always have your back to somebody, pretty much, and I guess I wonder if it's really necessary to have the podium in the middle, and I know some of the other instructors wondered about that as well. I think the value is maybe theoretical, the whole idea of the teacher being, you know, part of the group, but I think what's nice about the room is that we have the space to move around, but I don't think it would matter if the podium were somewhere else. That would be okay as long as we have the space to move around and we could still access all the technology on the walls and interact that way. But I think if I were asked for advice about redesigning a room, I don't think it's necessary to have that podium in the middle, and I think it's even obstructive for some students.
Other comments?
David?
Oh, sorry, Sean.
I didn't teach in 627. I was in Burnside 511, and it's the complete opposite scenario. The teacher is actually in the corner of the room and very far from one side of it. And so I would say the exact opposite of what you just said. It is a problem. I find the fact that the fact that you have the teacher in the middle of the room is really an invitation to changing your habits. Teaching, you know, like you're no longer the guy with the knowledge in one side of the crowd. You have to. It forces you to become part of the crowd, and I think it sends a strong message about, you know, changing the relationship between the instructor and the student. I would prefer, honestly, I would prefer the scenario of the education room, because I think that it really forces you to change the way you teach.
David, I actually think, talking to Adam, where the podium is irrelevant now. I think if we were to redesign these rooms instantly or today, we could put these podiums on wheels and move them around very, very easily. And with today's technology and the wireless technology, it doesn't matter where they are in the room, we can communicate with them. And I think you can achieve both the criticisms that have been raised here. We can easily solve those problems by the instructor being in the middle of the room and being totally detached from the podium. I will comment, though, as somebody that has a very limited amount of dexterity, that it does require some spatial skill to be able to use these remote controls when your podium is over the other side of the room. So I think I turned it into a form of entertainment in my classroom, because it was kind of watch Nigel's cursor fly all over the room, because you're trying to do it with one of these rollerball things and stuff like this, until one of the students said to me they actually started feeling seasick at the time. But I think there's a dynamic you can build in here, and I do say, I think get in the middle of the students is a real plus, but get the podium out of there, which is a physical obstruction, and I think you could satisfy both the criticisms being raised by doing that.
There may be another spin-off to this, which we're trying to spin it off in chemistry. We have a room that is perhaps about one-third the size of this, that it's a singularly ugly room. And what we've been experimenting with, because of the wonderful chairs that have a price tag that's, I don't even like to say what it is, because you can buy, I don't know, Lazy Boy rockers for almost this kind of, the $400 a chair. But they do whiz around the room very, very nicely, and they're really comfortable. It's kind of surprising. Wouldn't you have said you don't find them comfortable? Okay, that's the single vote that I've heard negatively, but I found most people, actually almost everybody, liked them. What I'm trying to drive at is that in this small room in chemistry, we're going to buy these very large, or these large tables and these chairs. We're going to buy the chairs, but we're going to try, I think, to go to a hexagonal. It's not that it's shaped like a benzene ring, but it is, where there are fewer people to be seated, and they're much less expensive because they're made in the Eastern Townships and they're used at Dawson College. And we had a recent session up in 627, a sort of a debriefing session where three individuals came from Dawson to show what they had. And these tables were smaller and less expensive. So I think what I'm getting at is that some of you who have maybe a little bit of money that you can find from your chairs or your coordinators in those buildings, you might convert smaller rooms to this kind of environment. And we have all of the professors that in this particular cohort that I gave a suggestion to, you know, in chemistry, they all wanted to do this as long as the blackboards weren't interfered with or the projector, and they're not. It's going to be, I think, a help for us. So having said that, I hope you'll all be able to try that. Oh, yes, go ahead.
Hi. Just commenting on what some of the other people were saying, I taught in that room for the two semesters this year. Absolutely loved it. At the beginning of the first couple of weeks, I was tied to that podium in the center, and then I said, screw it, and let my voice carry, and I wandered all over the room, and I used the chairs to wheel myself all over the room when I wanted to see the computers, the kids' screens the kids were working on. And then the joke in the class became, where's Maureen? Because I'm short, they didn't find me, they couldn't see me.
Where's Waldo?
Where's Waldo? They knew I was in the room someplace, and I would sort of wave at them from a corner, and I would say, okay, whatever the next step was, and I would say, tell a student in the class, go to the podium, share that computer. And so I didn't own the technology in the room, the kids did, and I found by about halfway through the course it was really much more of a learning community of the class rather than one way me sending out the information and then playing with it afterwards. And that really went a long way towards getting the kids to interact and to get it more of a relaxed atmosphere in the class.
Unless you're in the medicine or law faculty, there is a downside to that room, particularly if you're in the Otto Mass building, because it couldn't be much farther away or more uphill. Is there other? Yes, please.
We've tossed around a bit of terminology today. We've used active learning, we've used social networking, we've used learning communities. And I would just like to say that this room is facilitating social networking. And I think that's what we're talking about today, is using technology so that the classroom becomes a place for social constructivist activity. And that's learning. And so these rooms are wonderful, and the more that we have at McGill where students can do social networking while they learn, the more happy we're going to be in terms of instructors, in terms of learners. We'll have students coming to class because they can interact rather than be passive and just listening. So really, this is great, and I think the technology can really take us a long way. Thanks.
I certainly saw that in the course evaluations. Mine was I went in the first term, so I actually have the benefits of having my course evaluations, and also I had taught the course, the very same course and the very same content for 6 or 7 years. So the only thing that changed really was the structure of the classroom and how we were delivering it. And on those types of questions that relate to kind of the student's experience and what they felt in terms of feeling good about the course and in what their levels of comprehension of the material and whether they really thought something came out of, they all went up. And the one question in particular was, would you recommend this course to your fellow students? So the course always gets the evaluation that's very low. The low numbers come in when saying, rate this in degree of difficulty relative to your other courses, meaning that the students find this a harder course than their other courses. And for this year, the evaluations went well over 4.5 for recommending that course, this particular course, to other students to take to their colleagues. So their experience, I think you're absolutely correct. The experience, I don't know what you call the terms, but the experience for the students, I think, went way up.
There's a particular technology that I enjoyed in the classroom, which I think facilitated some of the networking and collaboration that we haven't talked about, which was writing on the walls, which was a really interesting way of not just seeing the podium as the center of the room, but seeing the extremities of the room as individual centers, and so each student or student group could use the wall as their sort of, as their screen, and then because the screens were disparately placed, partway through class we could get up and move around the room and look at different boards. And towards the end of the course, I found students were in fact spontaneously using the boards to write things down themselves. So it really changed the sort of geography of the classroom.
Kevin?
My real question, being from animal science, was why you had social implications for eating meat. But to come back to the current one here, my devil's advocate comment would be, my impression is that the after contains less students than the before, that you can fit less students in the new system than you could before.
Every renovation of any room rocks all rooms by 10%.
Except for Mike, that's not true, Adam, because we've gone from, I had the maximum capacity of 26 students.
We knocked out a wall.
Yeah, well, okay. But you can do 48 now in the room I'm teaching in. So you've significantly increased capacity to be able to do this. So. Yeah. If I get 48 in this course, I'm going to be dead. But, I mean, that's, you can...
But we're talking about knocking down a wall in the Mac scenario, too. My question is, given that we're all under the gun for timetable and that we don't have large enough classrooms for a lot of things, if it comes to a decision between having to have two sessions in a classroom like this versus one in the standard one where all the students have access to a row of computers, are the profs not going to opt for the new system? And is it going to be a deterrent in the end? Just a...
Interesting point. One comment that I would like you not to go away with is the idea that it's going to be necessarily that easy to apply for funds, because it turns out that the bulk of the funds, and I think both of these rooms went to ventilation circumstances rather than computers. It looks pretty fancy with the computers, but they actually were a relatively minor, well, they weren't minor, but they were a maybe 20-25% or something like that of the total cost, and it was because this room, you couldn't breathe in it, apparently. I had never been to that high level in the education faculty before, but it really did work out very well.